Welcome to As Told Here, conversations and stories shared in the public interest in Studio W at WPAA-TV and Community Media Center. As Told Here brings community media to where you are.
Welcome to Community Conversations. My name is Alita Sella. I am chair of the Wallingford Democratic Town Committee, and I'm here today with Alexa Tomasi, my friend, as well as DTC member, as well as former town council candidate, to talk about the challenge of building consensus. There's been a lot of references to infighting in the DTC, and we are here to sort of discuss that, address that, and also just talk about the DTC in general, what we're doing, where we're going, and also what the Republicans are doing and where they might be going. So thank you for joining us. Hi.
Hi.
Us to talk about were references to the infighting in the DTC, starting with the history of the DTC. The Democrats had been a force in town the similar way that the Republicans had been a force in town for many, many, many decades. 40 years ago, when the Democrats were last in power, the Democrats didn't honor the Republican nominee for town council, similar to what happened
sounds familiar
recently. And the Democratic Party in town really has not been a force to reckon with ever since. Just broke apart. There was infighting. Mm-hmm. There was not a lot of space for new voices. I know that time and time again, new voices trying to emerge in the Democratic Party were not supported. And in fact, were discouraged from running, or other people would primary them or run against them. And it ended up that predictably we were left in the minority. I know when Gouveia ran several times and came within votes of being mayor, that part of that was that 100% of the DTC wasn't supportive of his candidacy. And we shot ourselves in the foot more times than not, unfortunately. That's infighting, as I would define infighting. I don't know what your impression is, but I think we're way more focused.
Definitely.
Now. Tell us about your introduction to the DTC.
Well, I joined in 2018 as like an official member, but I hadn't even known that there was a DTC until I had volunteered with Jared Liu on one of the mayoral campaigns. And he said, like, you should join the DTC. And I was like, what's that? And I had no idea there were meetings. I had no idea there was a group of other people who shared a lot of the same values. Yeah. And I mean, going back to, you know, years before I ran or even joined the DTC, I read a book about a young person that ran for mayor in Michigan. And I was like, that sounds cool. Like, I found it very inspiring. And I thought, like, this is maybe a cool place to start. And I had emailed all the counselors at the time. And every single one of them from both sides emailed me back and were like, you're young. You should just finish college. Like, you know, don't bother with this. Like, there's no place for you. And I remember feeling very defeated. But also, they did not try to bring me in on either side. I mean, I don't know if I, you know, said, I'm a Democrat. Like, I have no idea if that was the conversation, but nobody tried to bring me in. Nobody talked about the different opportunities, the RTC, the DTC, whatever else, you know, boards or commissions or anything like that, to sort of get in the pipeline, which is what you'd think, you know, any party would sort of be hopeful
for. You got a candidate knocking on your door saying, I want to run for something.
And I just felt very defeated by it. And I basically never brought it up again and had no idea that there was even any parties, you know, working in town on a larger scale until well after college. And, you know, I don't know, I joined as a member in 2018 after Jared asked me to, told me I should. And I was like, okay, what do I have to do? I didn't even know. And I thought, all right, I can go to a meeting. And it's just been a really great learning experience so far. I mean, we hit the ground running, you know, this year in the middle of a pandemic, or this term, the last term. But it seemed odd that there was no system in place to like usher people in who were saying, I want to do something.
2017, 2018 is when I started getting involved too. But prior to that, for the 20 years I'd been living in Wallingford, I came to town. I was a union organizer for Yale University Local 34 when I first came to Connecticut. And I was interested in getting involved politically in town, and I was told not to bother. That the DTC was just infighting and not worth an organization to even bother trying to get involved with. So I didn't. I really didn't think much about it. And then in 2017, 2018, while I was working for Solar City, I was selling solar. I met State Rep Josh Elliott, and he encouraged me to run for something. And so I came to a DTC meeting, and that's when I met Dan Fontaine. And Dan Fontaine's campaign manager was actually my former employer, union organizer, Kathy Meyerson. And so I helped out on his campaign for 2 years and got a real insight into what was going on with the DTC, really got exposure to seeing how candidates were being run through the municipal elections, what was happening, what the dynamics were, and just sort of saw a pathway that I was like, huh, I could really apply the union experience that I had from 20 years ago and help this organization get focused and actually possibly win.
Right.
You know, if we just harnessed all this energy in this room in the right direction, we might actually be able to get somewhere. So I was so excited to meet you, and have sort of made it my mission to do leadership development of all voices across the board. There's a place for everybody in our DTC. So just to address the accusation of infighting, I mean, we have a group of 100 people coming from very diverse experiences. So there's going to be some amount of healthy disagreement, but the key is that we all care about Wallingford. We all care about making sure this town is getting invested in, and that we realize that the current leadership is not going to get us there.
Yeah.
Where this is coming from, we should address the elephant in the room. Jason Zandri has made very public statements that, you know, there's a lot of infighting on the DTC, and there's definitely differing opinions on strategy. You know, it sort of devolved because about is this decision to run six versus nine candidates. And we had been looking into that since maybe the end of the like last
December,
cycle,
yeah,
right?
November and December.
Because I wanted
before.
To hit the ground running. Yeah. I wanted to start door knocking in January,
yeah.
Right? I was ready to make endorsements.
We
and
pushed
door knock.
Up to like February.
We had to because the state calendar wouldn't let us endorse that early. So instead, we came up with this team concept, and we were gonna. I was very into the idea of running nine candidates because in a democracy, of course, you should have more candidates. Doesn't that make sense? And through debate and discussion and meetings and running numbers and differing opinions and all sorts of things, we came to the conclusion that six is better. And I think you were talking earlier about those reasons, and I really like the way you put it.
Yeah, I mean, I'd never had to, for any reason, consider a six versus nine situation unless I was voting, and, you know, even that is its own, you know, battle. do you use all nine or whatever? But I thought, you know, somebody said to me, look at it a couple ways. Nine people's worth of resources and money, and also running nine guarantee that three don't win. And it's a lot of mental, physical, emotional capacity that it takes out of you to run a solid, good campaign from February to November. And to sort of save someone that energy that could then be redirected to something else that they're maybe great at.
Or helping another candidate. Or,
right. Like, just to save three people from an automatic loss seemed like almost the most like ethical way to do things. Like, if when I put myself in the situation and I thought, all right, well, if I run as nine and I'm just like basically, you know, I'm a new person, I'm guaranteed to probably be on the bottom. Like, if I could save myself from that, then I would. And know I could be useful in a different capacity. And then I really did think hard a lot about the dollars, like to pay for nine things versus six things or right. names on things and that, you know, that kind of thing. It just seemed like, you know,
right.
three people are not going to win.
Right.
Three, you're going to be spending money on these right. people for 10 months, nearly, you know.
Spending human
hours and dollars on,
right,
you know,
right,
a so bigger group than you need, really.
Condense your resources, mm-hmm, and focus on the six who, mm-hmm, have a shot at winning versus,
yeah,
nine, mm-hmm, with three who are guaranteed to lose.
And right.
This is at-large voting, right? Mm-hmm. So instead of being able to run district by district, where we have nine districts and district one would have two people, mm-hmm, running, and district two would have two people running, one Republican, one Democrat, et cetera, throughout town. Now, if you had district by district, the people in district one would only have to vote, knock the doors of district one,
yeah,
of your neighbors, of your friends, of the school that you go to, of all the people you run into in your own neighborhood, mm-hmm, and that's 5,000 doors.
Right.
You're running at large, you're knocking 45,000 doors.
Yeah.
It's harder to run for town councilor than it is to run for mayor, mm-hmm, because you're running literally against, if there's six from each side, 12, mm-hmm, other people. And if each side picks more candidates, now you could have up to 18 candidates. Mm-hmm. How do you distinguish yourself in,
right,
a municipal election against 18 other candidates, mm-hmm, or even 12 other candidates?
And
easily,
you're supposed to cover a lot of ground, and it's like nearly,
well,
impossible.
How do you build that name recognition,
right,
if you're not doing,
right,
the door knocking?
Mm-hmm.
Right? And if you're doing the door knocking, I mean, Gina was an exception to the rule,
mm-hmm,
and she worked her butt off. And she lost the first time around, and, mm-hmm, she won the second time around only because
she knocked so
Larry
much.
And,
yep,
and Gina knocked every single door in Wallingford.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the only way you can do it. That's
what she did with us.
Right, yes.
I mean, I learned from the best, yeah, there in the game, because,
yeah, yeah,
she took us out with her,
yeah,
and taught us, yeah, the ropes, basically.
So that's the background of the frustration of candidates,
mm-hmm,
running, right? So we had great candidates run who didn't feel supported by the DTC. The DTC for a long time had an attitude of candidates were on their own. You know, we're the DTC, but, mm-hmm, you're the candidate.
Right.
You want to run. Great. Good luck to you.
My experience just as a member, my first term, was that everybody was running for themselves. There was not a lot of cohesive teamwork. And, you know, I've talked to those people, and they don't say that they necessarily felt like they, but it, from the outside, it looked like they were just them doing everything. And it was a lot of work,
right,
and it's a heavy lift when you don't have a team behind you,
right,
and you don't have enough people to, you know,
right,
fulfill the strategy. And I always felt really bad for them, because I felt like, I'm one person too. Like, what can I do for all these, you know,
right,
six people or whatever who are, you know, doing their own thing with their own mailers and their own magnets and their own,
right,
messaging.
How do you door knock for all of them?
Yeah,
right,
yeah. So I basically decided to run because we were doing a slate. I thought, I don't necessarily want to have to do it by myself. I want to be on a team, because I'm happy to knock for me, but I'm also happy to knock for everyone else. And that's where we all agreed. Like,
I think that's an excellent point. I was able to recruit more candidates because of the promise,
yeah,
that we were looking at running this as a team.
Mm-hmm.
That was my hope and desire.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what the strategy that I wanted to,
yeah,
go with.
It's daunting to think, all right, I need my own campaign manager and my own treasurer and my own, I got to keep track of dollars. And the thought of doing that all just me was very scary, and I didn't really want to do that. This was the best option for me.
Right. With no financial support.
And for others.
Right.
Right. Right. Coming in just going to fundraise my best, you know, and put it in the pot with everyone.
Right.
Which I was fine with doing.
And we did an amazing job.
We did.
We raised
$50,000.
Right. I mean, everything that happened convinces me more that we did the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
So from the ability to attract candidates, to how candidates felt supported, to the amount of money that we were able to raise, to the number of voters,
mm-hmm,
who have registered as,
mm-hmm,
Democrats over the last 2 years, signals to me that we have the right message, that we're going in the right direction.
Yeah. And I think we've worked on building partnerships with other people, either as individuals or advocates or groups, that have bolstered that too. I mean, we were registering people at the Pride rally that came because I've lived in Wallingford my whole life, and I had the same teacher as Amy Bowie in high school.
Right.
And, you know, she said, can you help my student do a protest? And I was like, of course I can. And there were lots of, you know, 17, 18-year-olds who were really pumped to register to vote on a piece of paper at this event. And, you know, between basically 2017 and 2021, where we've been able to make those very personal relationships with new voters, young,
yeah,
voters, to be like, we're talking about the things that matter.
Right.
has definitely, I mean, been a good thing for us because they're the next generation, and we need, we have literal data that we have so many more voters, and it's awesome.
Right. We came closer than we had in 30 years.
Yeah. As long as my whole life.
To mayor. And you know, the, you really feel the tide changing in town, you know,
They're ready.
Yeah. They're ready.
Yeah.
I want to talk about the irony of the at-large voting too. We had touched upon that. The irony that it was the Democrats, I don't know whether it was 50 years ago or 60 years ago, whenever it was, when it was the Democrats that introduced at-large voting to sort of cement their hold on power, recognizing that that is because in at-large voting, how difficult it is for people without name recognition to run, that if you are in power, already have name recognition, it's very easy to hold on to your, or it's easier to hold on to your seat. And then the Democrats lost power 40 years ago and not been able to regain it back since. And that at-large voting has definitely been a mechanism to prevent that swing from happening again. Addressing the discussion of infighting, we're having a open conversation about strategies and what we want to see for Wallingford. We have we're growing as an organization. We have new and diverse voices. It's not uncommon to walk into a meeting with one opinion about what you think should happen and be convinced by everybody else that it should be different.
Right.
And I walked in convinced that nine would probably be the right, open to hearing what everybody had to say, but you know, I definitely held that opinion and came away believing, for all the reasons you laid out and the numbers that Jesse ran through, and we looked at this up and down and left and right in every way we could, analyzing who had run and how many candidates had run and how many voters had turned out to figure out whether there was an advantage to having six versus nine. And as clear as we could get it, it was clear that that six was better. And I'm so glad that we went that way. And I know that there's opinion letters that voters feel like that they were robbed of that choice. One, get involved with the DTC. If you want to have a say in who those candidates are, the DTC is where it's happening. And our meetings are public and we want people to be joining those. What running nine means is it becomes a primary in a general election. Because three Democrats are guaranteed to lose, or six, three Republicans, if they ran nine, are guaranteed to lose. You're literally setting up yourself to having a primary in the middle of an election, where if it was a situation where we ran nine and all the voters in Wallingford got to decide which three got eliminated, and then we ran against the Republicans, that could be something that happened, but that's not what's happening.
Right.
You are competing against your fellow Democrats, and that is means that the narrative for what happens in town keeps getting lost to the Republicans, and we want to take that back. That is the goal of my job as chairman, as chair. My job as chair is to help Democrats get elected to office, period, end of story. So it does become a question of strategy. It does become a question of how do we involve Democrats into helping us make those choices about who those candidates should be, who are the best candidates, and running the best candidates so that we have a wider appeal to unaffiliateds and even Republicans. We have a healthy amount, as I see it, a healthy amount of disagreement. I can't fire anybody. I can't agree with everybody at all times. The only thing I can do is encourage conversation, debate, and ideas. And that gets messy sometimes.
Yeah. I was going to say, it doesn't feel, infighting seems dramatic to me. I don't feel like it's, you know, as bad as everyone's making it sound. From where I sat as a member and a candidate, it was one or a very few other people who didn't think the same way about what something the majority had basically discussed and included them in and decided. You know, of course, people are going to disagree on strategy. In the slate, we had many things that we didn't all agree on, but we had consistent meetings, consistent communication. We talked everything through, and people make, you know, moves when they need to for the good of the group, and something that just wasn't happening midsummer. And, you know, I don't think there was a lot of consideration for what a lot of other people had already discussed and sort of aligned with. I wouldn't call it infighting. I mean, it was just sort of like one person threw up their hands and left instead of having, you know, the rest of the conversation with all of us, or even really seeing why we felt how we felt.
Right.
So, you know, to call it infighting seems like a bit much to me.
Right.
People are going to disagree, of course. I mean, we all, even on the slate, come from different parts of the spectrum of being of like democratic ideals, but we all managed to work just fine together.
Yes.
Throughout. And still do. I mean, I would like to say we're all still each other's biggest fans. I mean, I made friends that I will have for life. Like, and they might not think the same way as me on some things, and that's okay.
Yeah.
People, you know, figured out what they needed to figure out, and, you know, we worked really well together.
Yeah.
In the end.
No, I have to say, for the most part, I think it was a struggle to build team this time around. I think as a brand new chair, untested, with a brand new idea and a brand new strategy, bringing people together who were very suspicious about what my motivations might be, whether this was going to work, distrust of each other, because people didn't know each other, right? Incumbents afraid that they were going to lose their seats, which was crazy because we're guaranteed three, right? And they have the recognition, the name recognition. If anybody's going to lose, it's not going to be the three incumbents, No matter how far out on the limb we go, we're still going to have three Democrats.
Yeah.
Like, we could go nuts and we're still going to have three Democrats.
Right.
The challenge was is that the incumbents, except for Gina, really never had really been through a real campaign. They just hadn't. They win because they put out a few lawn signs and already have name recognition. Either they've been a teacher in town and everybody knows them for decades, or they've been on the Board of Ed for decades and everybody already knows them. So they have that going for them. And to win, they didn't really have to do much because of at-large voting. The goal wasn't just to get our incumbents reelected. The goal was to get our slate of six elected, to sweep the town council and Board of Ed and the mayor. That was our goal. Nothing short of that. And so that required asking the incumbents to actually campaign in a way that they never had. And I think that also was a internal struggle.
Because
if you've never campaigned, you don't know what it is.
It's uncomfortable. I don't love door knocking. Like, there are some people that do, but it's just what you do. I mean, it's like it's the tactic. It's what you do. And the more you do it, the easier it is and more comfortable you get. But if you haven't done it and you don't want to, I mean, I could see why you don't want to, but, and what you were saying before about trying something new, I sort of felt too, like, all right, well, we've done things this way this long and I've seen it up close, you know, one or two rounds in the past. Why not try a new way and see if you can gain some ground, which we gained ground in the numbers, in the vote totals, which that's this process. It's not overnight.
That's organizing.
Right. So I felt like, I think part of what people see as the infighting was the disagreement on the slate strategy, regardless of six or nine. But why is it no one's fault that no one won two cycles before, one cycle before, three cycles before, five cycles before?
With nothing to show for it.
Right. You know, I don't like that narrative because we tried something new and we got further and closer than we ever have.
More volunteers.
Amazing volunteers.
Amazing
so
volunteers.
So many that I couldn't even name them all.
More active participation from our DTC membership than anybody can remember in decades. Right? More candidates.
Right. Then we know what to do with.
Right. And then we've built our internal leadership. Right. We went from our chairs struggling to get executive board members to even come to executive board meetings to, we have co-chairs.
Most of the districts.
For most of our districts. So we have two representatives from each district at the executive board meetings giving input and then communicating out to their members and getting ideas and bringing that back to the executive board and sharing all of that with the in the main meetings and on our social media. I mean, we have website that we never had before. We have email lists that we never had before. We have the Facebook pages and Instagram and Twitter mm-hmm. and all of these tools that just didn't exist mm-hmm. before. And we have volunteers right. running all of that. Mm-hmm. I work full time. I own two businesses. I've got three kids. Like, I can't do this right. by myself. Mm-hmm. And all I'm doing is taking people's ideas and delegating mm-hmm. and encouraging leadership on every level. You want to do that? Great. You know who just told me about something that they wanted to do similar? So-and-so. Why don't you get to do it mm-hmm. together with so-and-so and present it at the next meeting and see how many volunteers you get. Boom. Now we got a whole right. new committee. Mm-hmm. We have a communications committee. We have an issues committee. We have the candidate committee. We have a diversity committee. We have a bylaws committee. I mean, we just committee yeah. upon committee with the ability to also appoint the chairs of those committees to the executive board. So now our, mm-hmm. our leadership range has even grown beyond just district leaders. It's been incredible.
Yeah.
It's been incredible. Yeah. Is there a healthy level of disagreement? Yeah.
Of course.
And in fact, I think I would be a terrible leader if I didn't encourage that. Mm-hmm. The thing I want to do is to be questioned. If I'm doing something wrong, I want to know about it. I never want to have my own personal biases mean that we go in a wrong direction mm-hmm. because of me,
yeah.
right? That's really important to me, that people question me and that I can actually answer in an intelligent way or change my mind mm-hmm. and go in a different
right.
direction.
Yeah.
Right.
That's after we have a discussion, which right. is really how we do everything.
Right. The thing I fear the most is when people don't speak up mm-hmm. or won't speak up, because that's the point where people are withholding information and not sharing with you, no, there's a better way mm-hmm. or there's better ideas.
Yeah.
And that's not a healthy direction,
yeah.
which segues into why is there not more discussion on the Republican side about strategy for town mm-hmm. and how to improve our town and how to grow our town and how to invest in our buildings and our infrastructure? Why is nobody taking on the mayor from the Republican side? Why is nobody questioning the chair on mm-hmm. the other side about their leadership or lack thereof? What's happening seems to be this acquiescence and deafening silence from the Republican side that indicates to me poor leadership, mm-hmm. right? If you are disagreeing with your mayor, people are afraid of being fired, of losing people are afraid yeah. of the mayor.
Yeah, I think it's a bit of a culture of fear
yeah.
under him in particular. And I think it's just grasping for all the power that they can keep, whether whatever happened at town council a few weeks ago was the right thing to do or not. And I think that's sort of a trickle down from what we're seeing in the federal government, where two people can block whatever they decide to block. I mean, I think that's what they want here. I think they know that the wave of change is coming and that the people are ready, like we talked about, and that they're vulnerable for the first time in a really long time. And so they'll do whatever they have to do.
So rather than
do what's right, the best thing for town, however that may be, however that plays out, policy-wise, budget-wise, people-wise.
We're fine. Look at the DTC. Look at all the infighting yeah. that's happening over there. Nothing to see right. over here. Mm-hmm. We're perfect.
Yep. Right. While the schools flood and the animal shelter overheats and, you know.
And we've lost our community pool.
And our right. And our pool is a disgusting.
And the ceiling is falling down in town hall.
Right.
And the parks need attention mm-hmm. and our roads need attention. And funds go that are allocated to be spent for town improvements go unspent mm-hmm. and go back into right. the slush fund and the general fund yep. for a rainy day.
When sometimes it's raining in the town hall.
Right. Raining literally. In the town hall, or, hey, COVID hit. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't that have been a great time to use some of those rainy day funds to do infrastructure improvements while people needed jobs,
yep.
right? Especially an outdoor job, mm-hmm. like a pool.
Like a pool.
right? And how could you not see that there was going to be an exploded demand after everybody's been quarantined mm-hmm. for that period of time, that there would be pent up? I mean, yeah. it was just such lack of foresight.
And because... Right. All right, so we were all cooped up for a year or more. Some of us still are. to not improve and build and present community spaces where people can reconnect in a safe way. It's like a, I mean, it's part of public health that people have some safe place to go and be outside and be in nature and get exercise et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. When it's heat waves in the summer like we have, it's important for people to have a pool. I mean, there's so many things that I just think falls to the community level. It's whether it's the pool or a park or a skate park, like the kids want a bike park, skate park situation. The people are asking for you to provide them with things to do in the town that they love, instead of just letting everything fall apart or just go undone.
Right.
And then what problems come from that?
As leaders, the people you have to think about are not the people in the middle, it's the people at the bottom, mm-hmm. right? How do you support the people at the bottom mm-hmm. so that they can be the best that they can be, mm-hmm. that those families and kids can get the support that they need? So, community pool, YMCA, all sorts of community, even public access TV, where kids can come and participate here and run shows and learn technology mm-hmm. and then go out and either get jobs doing that or go on to college mm-hmm. doing that. I mean, there's so many assets in town that are underserved and under-supported mm-hmm. that would benefit so many people. It's criminal.
Yeah.
And there's nobody running against the mayor as even just as a primary, mm-hmm. right? Nobody's threatening to primary the mayor. No, you know, they don't run 9 people for a town council ever. And I think it's pretty disingenuous to say that there's nobody who's been interested in running for town council mm-hmm. on the Republican side. It sounds like they're a pretty well-disciplined group mm-hmm. and you're told to wait your turn until there's an opening before you're allowed to run, and people stay in line and wait their turns and are waiting for crumbs from the Republican table. Well, we're not going to stand around waiting for crumbs from the Republican mm-hmm. table anymore. We did that run for 40 years, mm-hmm. Now we're organizing and we're talking directly to the voters, and voters are listening, because at a time when across our state, both the Democratic Party and the Republican Party are losing voters, we gained 15% mm-hmm. of registered Democrats in Wallingford. That tells you something.
Right. Yeah.
That tells you something. People are ready for a change, and we're doing the organizing and we're doing the communicating, and we're getting there.
I think sometimes too, the issues that come through most from the people, at least when I was door knocking, the pool was a big deal to a lot of people. Yeah. The parks, you know, and they kind of get laughed off, like, you don't need a pool. Not everybody has a pool, you know, whatever the excuse might be. It's just like, don't you want people to just enjoy as much time here as they can in our town and go to our pool and our businesses and that kind of thing? It's not just silly because it's a pool. It's a landmark. That's important to a lot of people.
Well, the animal shelter. It blows your mind. This woman left $700,000 mm-hmm. to the animal shelter, and the mayor refuses to touch it. And there's no air conditioning in that building.
And it's a crisis. It's a crisis. It's not just like it gets kind of warm.
And not just like a one-time crisis. This has been over years that mm-hmm. the animal control officers have been trying to get this addressed mm-hmm. with the mayor, and the mayor just literally ignoring the problem. Literally ignoring the problem. Mm-hmm. Sweeping it under the rug. And none of the Republicans on that side
made a huge fuss about it.
Challenging him on it. Telling him it was wrong, either in public or in private. Nobody's taking him aside and saying, dude.
it would have been an easy fix, and it would have looked great if he just did it.
And people would have been thrilled and happy. And it's a great organization, that mm-hmm. animal shelter.
They have some reflecting to do as a party.
I would agree. Why is
on that? Every level. Right. I mean, it's, you know, a lot of people have lots of anger about the Republican Party, you know, and you know, at the highest levels, but it's really everywhere. To say it's not here is not true.
Right. No doubt that the Democratic Party has a lot of self-reflecting mm-hmm. to do. I mean, just like Tea Party or Trumpsters, we've had Bernie Bros and what have you. But I would have to say, for the most part, what you hear the complaint about the Democratic Party is maybe we're not disciplined or that, but the whole idea is that we are trying to make space for more voices, mm-hmm. that we're not asserting our opinions. We are saying, hey, I have this idea. What's yours?
What do you think about it? Right. Or how can we meld them together?
Right.
And do something about it.
Right. So
we're very action oriented. We don't want to sit around and fight, and we don't want
fact based.
Yeah.
Research based. What do the scientists mm-hmm. say? What do the experts say? Okay. And that's what the experts say.
And then what do we do to move it forward?
Right.
As a team.
Right. Right. And trusting in that mm-hmm. science and trusting in that expert. They went to school and studied this stuff. You know, who am I? And it's not that I don't question it, but when you have a consensus of mm-hmm. scientists or a consensus of data, go with it.
Yeah.
Pretty much everything, right? I mean, the rhinos in the room, you know, there are none right now because everybody's afraid of being labeled that way. And that's what we're seeing with, I think, on the other side. Thank you very much for listening to our community conversation. I've had a great time with you, Alexa.
Thank you
for joining us.
Thanks to our local producers and Team Hercules for production support. As Told Here, conversations and stories shared in the public interest in Studio W at WPAA-TV and Community Media Center. As Told Here brings community media to where you are.